Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
How do you reckon you'd go if you had only $38.98 a day to live on? There's a fair chance that some of you might be able to tell us tonight, because that's how much many of Australia's estimated 700,000 Newstart recipients are living on. It's the rate paid to a single unemployed person without children. While Newstart is indexed to inflation, it's been left behind in comparison with other welfare payments, such as the aged pension, which are indexed to average weekly earnings. With essentials such as power and rent increasing by much more than the CPI, that's meant Newstart recipients are finding it increasingly hard to get by. Not only are welfare agencies calling now for an urgent increase, they're being joined by most other groups in the community, including business leaders, economists. Even former Prime Minister John Howard says that freeze on Newstart rates has gone on for too long. Tonight we're going to take a look at Newstart. What's it like to live on? What obligations are job seekers meeting for their $38.98 a day? And are those tough measures having any real impact on helping people off Newstart? And why do governments seem so reluctant to boost the rate, despite calls from almost everyone to lift it? Professor Peter Whiteford's the man with the facts and figures here tonight. He's from the Crawford School of Public Policy at the Australian National University and joins us from our Canberra studio. Peter, good evening. Welcome to Nightlife.
Good evening, Philip.
Lovely to have you with us. Connie Lenneberg is the chief executive of the St. Vincent de Paul Society, which is actively campaigning for an increase in Newstart with a campaign called Share the Pie, and she's in Melbourne. Connie, good evening to you. Welcome to Nightlife.
Thanks, Philip. If I could just say I'm with the Brotherhood of St. Lawrence,
what did I
thank
say?
You.
I know you're with the Brotherhood of St. Lawrence.
You said something else, but very nice to be here.
So I did too. You're with the Brotherhood of St. Lawrence, exactly. My apologies to you.
No problem.
Also joining us tonight is Troy, who's 24 years old and a Newstart recipient, and he's coming to the studio tonight to talk about his experience. Troy, good evening to you and welcome to Nightlife.
Good evening, thank you.
Good to have you all on board. Peter, can we start with you? Even the former Prime Minister John Howard is using the term freeze to describe what's happened to Newstart payments, but they haven't actually been frozen, have they? How do they end up so far behind other welfare payments?
Well, essentially it was changes that occurred in 1997, shortly after John Howard became Prime Minister, which is when the government changed the indexation of pensions. So prior to that, under the Labor government, under the Hawke and Keating governments, what had happened was that both unemployment payments and pensions for aged pensioners and people with disabilities were indexed to prices, but roughly every year the government, the Hawke and Keating governments, had an ad hoc increase, so they had a special legislation in Parliament to increase it because they had the goal of keeping the single rate of pension and the single rate of Newstart at roughly 25% of average earnings. But what the Howard government did was they introduced legislation so that the age pension and disability pensions and at the time payments for lone parents were formally indexed to wages. So every year they went up with wages, but Newstart still remained linked to prices. So it was a sort of decision to improve the age and disability pensions rather than to change what happened to Newstart. But in contrast to what went on before, the Howard government didn't have any ad hoc increases. It didn't legislate each year like the previous government had done to increase Newstart. So gradually it started to fall behind, it compounds over time.
Yeah, exactly. It does compound over time. So how far behind everyone else now are Newstart recipients or Dole recipients once you consider all those factors?
Well, as I said, they weren't quite 25% of average earnings in 1996. They're about 19% now, 18 to 19%. So if you're getting about, if you're on Newstart as a single person, you're getting about 38% of the minimum wage. So you're falling, less than half of the minimum wage. The other thing is that as I said, over time it keeps falling behind unless governments make a decision to increase it. Mm. If you look at where, you know, somebody who was on Newstart in 1996 would have been sort of, you know, if you looked at the total distribution of income in Australian society, they would have been about $10 a week below a person who mm-hmm. is at the 10th percentile, that is 10% of the population are poorer than them. Now they're about $170 a week below that person at the 10th percentile. So what's happened is most other people in society have, you know, well, they're different people than they were 20 or 30 years ago, right? But they've moved up because we've had a really big increase in Australian incomes as, mm-hmm. Over time. But people on Newstart are sort of essentially living with the living standards that people had in the early 1990s.
Which is a good way to look at it, yes, exactly. So think about what it was like back in the early 1990s, and that, and you're still trying to make do with that amount of money today.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, I think it was in the late 80s or early 90s that, and that was the late 80s, that we first got mobile phones. We didn't get the internet till the 1990s. You know, these things weren't there. But the really important thing, I think, is probably rental prices and electricity and, you know, transport costs.
Connie, why haven't governments increased it? What's gone on?
Well, we're just bewildered by it because we know, and industry and economists all recognise that the level is so low that it's a barrier to employment. So Newstart's called a participation allowance, supposed to be striking a balance between providing an incentive for people who are unemployed to find their way into the workplace. But it's so low now that it's very hard to survive. A recent survey that we did found that 43% of people who were going to homeless services for assistance are actually on Newstart. Mm-hmm. A recent study by Anglicare looking at housing on a particular weekend about 6 weeks ago found that there were only three rental properties in all of Australian capital cities that a single person on Newstart could afford to live in. Mm. So, you know, we're driving people into homelessness.
So in other words, if you're on Newstart on your own, you simply can't, as a matter of fact, rent a place on your own.
Exactly. And so then if we're wanting people to, you know, have the confidence and the capability to present well for a job interview, it's very hard if you haven't got a stable place to live, if you haven't got enough funds to keep your mobile phone charged, if you're not able to, you know, buy the clothes so you can present well. And just the stress of getting through every fortnight, being able to make ends meet, doesn't set people up for success in terms of getting a job. So it is really quite bewildering when there's such a recognition that this is unfair, this is well below poverty lines and acceptable levels of supporting people when we're one of the richest countries in the world.
Well, the government would say, I'm sure, that hang on, this is not the whole picture, because after all, if people are on Newstart do get other payments. I mean, if you've got children, they get an energy supplement, for example. You also are eligible for rent assistance. When you take those things into account, is the picture much rosier?
Not really. The energy supplement is $4.50 a week, and we know how high energy costs are. And rent assistance for a single person is, again, $67 a week if your rent's over $150. And, you know, there was a study looking at rental affordability that found that in Melbourne, Sydney and Canberra, a single person on Newstart would need between 110% and 144% of their total income to find a single bedroom accommodation. Mm. So, you know, it's not adequate. Those two extra payments have not kept pace with the rising cost of energy and the rising cost of housing.
Mm. We're talking about Newstart and why it's so low, how it got there and what it's like to live on. Troy knows because he's 24 years old. He's from Melbourne's western suburbs and he lives on Newstart. Troy, good evening to you again. Tell us a bit about your story. It's a good example of life throwing you something of a curveball that you didn't probably expect. How did you end up where you are on Newstart?
I was initially working in various admin roles for around about 3 years. Mm-hmm. I then took a working holiday to Canada on what was initially a two-year visa. However, unfortunately, my mum had cancer and that got worse.
Mm-hmm.
So at about the six-month mark, I decided to stay to come back home. I wanted to be home to look after if anything had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then for a good part of about 12 months total, I was a stay-at-home carer. And when she passed away late last year,
mm-hmm.
I could no longer live off savings.
Did you have any money left by then?
By that point, no.
No.
And because we were no longer receiving any payments from my mother's employer,
mm-hmm.
I had to jump on Newstart so that we were able to make make the bills every week.
Mm-hmm. So you're how long you've been on it now for what, say 6 months about
3 months.
About 3 months, okay. How do you find getting by on $40 a day? Or not even $40 a day?
I am fortunate enough where I still live at home with my family.
Right.
So I'm able to contribute enough to the household bills where we're still able to get by with my my stepdad covering as well as my younger sister working.
Mm-hmm. Could you afford to live out of home?
Definitely not. Not even in a two-bedroom situation with a friend who does work full-time.
Mm.
So it was something that we looked at initially, and it just wasn't feasible.
Mm-hmm. All right. Newstart is supposed to be a helping hand while you look for a job. You've been looking for a job. How's that going?
Unfortunately, I've been fairly unsuccessful. It's very difficult to convey disengagement from the workforce on a resume or in a cover letter. And that's been the most difficult... what's the word I'm looking for? That's been the most difficult circumstance.
Right.
Because I haven't been working for
so what?
For so
employers
long.
Employers want to know what you've been doing, do they?
Yeah, and...
And trying to convey that in a letter is not so easy, saying, look, I've been looking after my mum.
Yeah, and there was a point where I had multiple resumes to see which one was more successful, to try and have some semblance of improvement to see if I would able to try different things. And the one that was... I got some replies to were ones that I didn't mention that I was a stay-at-home carer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also difficult because that's just completely missing the good part of 12 months on my resume.
Yeah. Do you get to the interview stage with anything or not?
Unfortunately, not from all the jobs that I've applied for over several months. I've gotten... two interviews, and they were both unsuccessful, both of which saying they went with someone with more experience.
Right. The old experience thing again. How do you get experience if you don't get a job in the first place?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how are you feeling? Do you think you'll get a job?
Well, I hope eventually I'll get a job. I have to remain hopeful that as long as I keep trying, something will come up, because it hasn't been a matter of... being picky or waiting for the right job. It's been waiting for any job.
Yeah. All right. In terms of the bills then, basically you couldn't afford to live out of home. That's how the fact that you've got someone covering the major bills, the electricity rates, all that sort of thing, is the reason that you can survive on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Peter, I'm just back to you for a second. That's Troy. I mean, who's with us? Troy's on Newstart. You'd agree with Connie, would you, that the figures would suggest that it's not feasible for a person on Newstart to think about renting on their own or living on their own?
Yeah, well, as Connie said, Yeah, the maximum amount of rent assistance you get if you're a single person is about $67 a week. You have to be paying $150 a week to get that amount. So if you're paying less than $150, you're getting less, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if your rent's more than $150, it doesn't go up. The rent assistance is the maximum is $67
right.
A week. Now, you know, the question is, you know, the statistics show that, you know, rent for a single, you know, the amount of rent, the cost of renting in capital cities is much, much greater than that. So, renting privately, you know, you get more money than the basic rate of Newstart, but it doesn't mean you're better off. Of course, you're a lot worse off because, you know, you have much less money after you pay your rent to pay for everything else. So, you know, sort of rent assistance also hasn't really kept up with what's actually happened to the price of the price of rent. You know, we've got pretty expensive housing in Australia. I mean, the other side of that is not only does it mean that puts people at risk of homelessness if they don't have family or parents to help support them, is that you know, increasingly it means that, you know, sort of you can only afford to rent in places that are on the outskirts of cities or are along, where rental costs are less. So you find there's much higher levels of receipt of unemployment payments in many areas outside of capital cities. So, places like the mid-north coast, Wyong, and in Queensland, north of the Sunshine Coast. So people are sort of increasingly having to sort of think about moving to places where they can afford housing, but job opportunities are a lot less.
Mm. Troy, what are your required? You're on Newstart, which, as I say, which is supposed to help you look for a job and get a job. What are you required to do for it? I mean, how many jobs do you have to apply for?
I believe it's 10 or 20 a fortnight.
Right. Do you think you would have been doing that?
Oh, absolutely. I personally have a routine where every morning I apply for at least 3 to 5 jobs.
Right.
While I'm just having a tea or a coffee, and that's how I start my day.
Mm-hmm. How do you apply for them? Off your phone, or how do you do it?
Off my computer, using job search engines like Seek and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. That's a thing in a way, isn't it? You're required to kind of have this technology available to you to keep applying for things, which you have to pay for. Yeah. I mean, if you would have to otherwise pay for an internet connection and run a mobile phone, etc., you're getting a bit of help, I guess, through your stepfather. Connie, just back to you on that. That's part of the issue here, isn't it? That, you know, you've got to actually stay connected and as a paid-up member of the community, in a sense, to give yourself a chance at a job too.
Absolutely, and it's meeting those costs which put people under a lot of pressure. You know, there are some really good programs around which work with businesses and with young people like Troy who are trying to get into the employment market to try and make a good match, to identify where are the entry-level positions and to help them get into those jobs, and there's some success with that, but there is an underlying level of unemployment which we have to recognise is there, and the workforce is changing. And so there's also the bigger sort of policy context of how are we providing the right training programs through TAFE to equip people for the jobs that are available now.
Mm.
And when you look at all of those changes, when we put people on Newstart at such a low level, we're actually saying to them that they're somehow responsible for their situation rather than that. This is actually a really big time of disruption. You know, one of the people we've been working with is an older woman who's been looking for steady work for 10 years. She lives in Ballarat. And one of her comments to me was, you feel like you're not quite human when you're on Newstart because you can't keep yourself looking nice. The second week you're scrabbling in the bottom of the cupboards trying to find if there's any dry foods that you could cook up. And, you know, that sort of feeling that somehow you're personally responsible, that you apply for 20 jobs a fortnight and you get knockbacks, And then you're struggling simply to keep food on the table, maybe having to go to charities for food vouchers. All of that seems not consistent with who we think we are as Australians.
I mean, some listening would say, well, like, hang on, Newstart's not supposed... I mean, the dole's not supposed to be something that, you know, makes you feel comfortable to live on. It shouldn't be a comfortable thing to live on. It should be difficult. And that's the incentive for people to get out there and get a job. What do you think of that argument?
Well, I think, yes, it should be an incentive, but it's far too low. It is a barrier. So not only is it not an incentive, it's certainly not enabling people. It's not a situation people will stay in willingly because it's just too hard to survive. So it does need to change quite dramatically to set people up for success.
Peter, just back to you for a second. What's the research work on this? I mean, what do we know about things like incentives to get a job and what levels of the dole should be? And, you know, how does Australia... Well, there are a number of questions here. How does Australia sit with what other countries are doing, for example?
Well, when you look at other high-income countries that are in the OECD, the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, for people who've been unemployed for less than 6 months, we have the lowest in the OECD level of benefits relative to wages. If you take away housing assistance, the United Kingdom is lower, but they actually cover everybody's housing costs. You know, like once you find rental, they will cover the whole lot, right? Which is certainly not what we do. So we're the lowest. We also, in terms of what we spend on, active labour market programs, that's sort of like the employment services. We're about the sixth lowest in the OECD. We spend about 0.2% of GDP on helping people find work. So we don't, that's extremely low. So we don't have those sort of programs that quite a number of other countries have that, you know, sort of reflect that helping people find work. So it's a sort of, we have a really cheap system, basically. And
does it work? Is there evidence that if you're tough, like some might say this is, that it's more effective in getting people off Newstart and into work?
What it is that, Australia has, by international standards, not that, there are a lot of people wouldn't say this, but we have a very flexible labour market. And what that means is that we have less long-term unemployment than a lot of other places, but we then also have a lot more precarious employment than a lot of other places. So in terms of, underemployment, so people who do have some sort of job, well, they've got a part-time job and they're looking for more hours, we also have the highest level in the OECD of underemployment. And what it also means is, is that a lot of people have short-term jobs and move between jobs and, the assumption in the past was once you got a job, it was a sort of a permanent full-time job. Yep. And, it was almost for your entire
life. But a lot of jobs these days are casual, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And in fact, if you look at the share of temporary workers, both full-time and part-time, again, we've got one of the highest levels in the OECD of people who are temporary workers. Okay. The other thing is, how big do the incentives have to be? As I said, if you look at the level of Newstart now for a single person, it's about 38% of the minimum wage. So you'd sort of you'd increase your income by more than double if you got a job, right? So the idea that you need to keep it down at that level to incentivise people I think we're a long way away from an area where we've got a problem.
Where do you think it should be, Connie?
Well, the Brotherhood, because there's so many different situations, if you're single, if you're a single parent, you're a couple, we don't peg a particular figure, but what we've said is we need to take it out of the political space and get an independent authority.
But you must have thought about a figure.
No.
Really?
Because, no, because it is so variable. What it needs to be is to be set the way we set other benefits like the age pension, to set it at a level which is set by an independent authority and which works out where is it fair for people in their different contexts. We certainly believe that the rental assistance needs to be looked at, so it's not just Newstart. You know, the latest budget has eliminated the energy supplement and energy costs certainly aren't going down. So no. We need to look at it as a total package and bring it to a level which is a much fairer incentive participation allowance.
Peter, you said that ours is the lowest in the OECD, the dole. What do you think it should be increased to say, make it about the average of the OECD?
It would be a very large number. It's complicated by the fact that, yeah, sort of that most other countries, apart from New Zealand and to some extent the United Kingdom, have contributory systems. So, you know, what happens is when you get a job, you're contributing, you have a special tax that you and your employer pay that's for all sorts of things like your old age pensions, but also for your unemployment insurance. So we don't have that sort of contributory system. What we've got is it just gets paid out of general government revenue. So it's very difficult to compare what it should be. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the level, if we increase the payment for a single person by $175 a fortnight, which sounds like a reasonably large increase, it would still only be half the minimum wage.
That compare with the OECD that you're talking about before?
We'd still be in the bottom half of the countries, really. Right.
So we're a long way behind, in other words.
Yeah. No, we are a long way behind. I mean, generally speaking, so we, if you look at, you know, what's called a replacement rate, which is, you know, sort of how much you get if you're out of work compared to somebody who's actually working full-time at a, not the average wage, but a sort of about two-thirds of the average, we're about 39% of the replacement rate is 39%. Okay. In most countries, it's about 60%. So you're talking about a 50% increase.
So we're talking about 50% increase. In other words, a single person on 22 years old with no kids at the moment gets $538 a fortnight. You're saying it ought to be more than 1,000. A fortnight?
Oh, no, 50% more.
Oh, sorry, 50% more. So it ought to be more nearly, seven or 800, which would get somewhere near what the OECD average is.
I mean, we are a high income country, but, you know, sort of as I said, I think what people tend to be concerned about is, you know, sort of is incentives to work. And, if you're still only paying people half the minimum wage, there is a very strong incentive to work. Mm. And as Troy said, you know, sort of we also have one of the, you know, in terms of how many times people have to sort of look for work each fortnight, it depends on your circumstances. It's between 8 and 20 times a fortnight. You have to – 8 and 20 jobs a fortnight you have to apply for. And that's also one of the, you know, the highest – requirements on people to look for work of any OECD country as well. So we've got a really low level of benefit. We've got a lot of job search requirements more than most other places. Mm.
Okay. Troy, we'll go to some calls straight after this. Troy, just back to you for a second. Others might say, well, Troy, if you can't find a job where you are, you should move. What do you say to that?
I think that sounds far simpler than it actually is, because it's not as simple as just taking all my stuff and leaving. And while I did that previously for a working holiday, I had a job before then. I had the income to do so. Whereas on Newstart, where I'm unable to save and have that cushioning if something goes wrong.
So you basically don't have any money to go anywhere, do you?
Yeah, there's that as well. And then like the setup and everything like that, as well as like being away from sounds a little silly, but being away from family and friends, your support network, it's incredibly vital.
Yeah, sure. No, I understand that. Let's take some calls. Sarah is first up. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Phil.
What, your thoughts or your experience?
Well, I had a bad accident in September last year and ended up in hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Previous to that, I was only had casual part-time work and had, you know, was still receiving a little bit here and there from Centrelink because to top up on, you know, if I didn't get enough work that fortnight. I went into hospital and I was in there for 3 months. And so I got, my Centrelink got cut off and everything because I didn't report and I was, you know, in mm-hmm. hospital. When I came out again in December, I went to Centrelink and what can I do? And they gave me 3 months grace of not having to look for work, but they just left me on the Centrelink payments. Now, those Centrelink payments don't even cover my rent.
This Centrelink payment is Newstart, though, is it?
Newstart.
Yeah, yeah.
Newstart doesn't even cover my rent. You know, I've had to slide on my rent, electricity. My parents have paid for my car registration. I've my phone. I'm really on the skids, and this is like I was on top of things, and now I'm way behind. I keep going to the Centrelink office, and last time I was there, they gave me a number for a homeless shelter. I said, "Look, I'm going to be homeless, and what am I going to do?" They said, "Well, there's nothing else we can give you. That's the most that you can get," and I don't understand how the government can let this happen.
Mm. Yeah, okay. Thanks, Sarah. Troy, presumably a car's an important thing if you're looking for a job too, is it? Have you got access to one?
Unfortunately not. I'm unable to even afford to get driving lessons to get my license.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the nature of the jobs that I apply for, they require it. A driver's license.
A lot of them would require a driver's license, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, I'm unable to get those, but I'm unable to get a job, so I can't afford the lessons, and it's just another cycle.
Another roundabout. Yeah, okay. Calls 1-300-800-222 is the number. John, hello.
Good evening, Phil. I'm living on the Sunshine Coast, and I'm being parked on Newstart. I've got triple chronic conditions, and I'm aged 60, mm-hmm. and just prior to, you know, I consider myself retired and unable to work on three chronic conditions. And even when I was looking for work, the job capacity people at Centrelink said I was only capable of between 5, 8 or maximum of 12 hours per week work. I'm currently doing voluntary work as part of the Newstart mutual obligation requirements, but I have vertigo and can't really do things, and I'm now getting bullied by the voluntary work organiser, which I enjoy doing because it's something in the field I worked in when I was working. There are just so many stipulations, and there are huge numbers of people in my position who should be on disability support or the age pension who have been parked on Newstart.
Because you're not eligible for this stage for the age pension. Why can't you get a disability pension, John?
Well, I applied for it and they said I didn't meet the criteria. Okay. They've increased it hugely so that even people who are who have, you know, lost limbs or major, you know, chronic conditions, and I've had stroke and have vertigo and also PTSD, I wasn't considered eligible. I was given the booby prize, as they call it, which is the early pension card so that you can get cheaper transport.
Mm.
But effectively it would be a couple of $100 or $200 a fortnight more if I was on disability support. So these hundreds of thousands of people across Australia or more who are parked on the Newstart rather than disability support are saving the government millions of dollars. You know, it's a cost-saving exercise, effectively, but leaving us in penury and poverty.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. All right, thank you, John. Tony, hi. G'day, Tony.
Hey, g'day, Phil. How you going?
I'm not bad.
G'day, Phil.
What's your story?
Yeah. I'd just like to let you know that, you know, it's a catch-22 for any unemployed person. My daughter's unemployed, but you know, if she moves out of town a bit further, well, therefore, she's going to lose the dole because she's moved into an area of less employment.
Oh, is that right? What do they cut your dole if you move into an area with where there are fewer jobs?
Yep, they certainly do.
So something of a catch-22. If you can't afford to live in the inner city, because if you move further out, they cut your dole anyway.
That's right, and then you've got further transport costs to get to places of Wi-Fi. It's just a never-ending circle, mate. It's terrible.
Yeah, okay. I mean, Connie, your comments, this is Connie Lenneberg, who's the Chief Executive of the Brotherhood of St Lawrence. It is something of a catch-22, isn't it, I guess? Do they actually cut the dole if you move somewhere where there are fewer jobs?
There's a lot of punitive elements to the way in which the new start allowance works. And I think just from the stories of both John and Sarah as well, you can see that there's something that's shifted in our understanding of what our social security system is for. You know, people who've worked, who've been, who are working, who've paid taxes, and the social security system is supposed to be a safety net when we get into trouble. And we've had two stories of people who've got into trouble with health issues and then they're left destitute. And I think it's extraordinary to think that Centrelink are giving you the phone number of a homeless shelter. You know, there's something fundamentally wrong in the way we're conceiving of what it means to have a safety net. And there are all kinds of sort of punitive measures. There's now new ones they're introducing about fines. I just don't understand how we can have a policy that doesn't recognise that there's something in the notion of citizenship that's being lost here, that we have rights as citizens and governments have responsibilities as well as we have obligations. And I do think we need a real rethink. It's heartbreaking, the number of stories like the three with Troy here and Tony's story we've heard. And you know, at the Brotherhood, we hear people say, you know, some nights they have to figure out whether they're going to feed the cat or whether they'll have something to eat. Stories of parents routinely going without meals in order to make sure the kids have something to eat. And when you think how wealthy we are, 26 years of growth, consistent growth in Australia, and, you know, this is something quite new, this level of destitution that people of all ages and of all kinds of educational attainments are being pushed into.
Okay.
I think it's a moral crisis as well as an economic crisis, because these people have talents, skills, desires, aspirations to contribute to our community, and they're being increasingly locked out by a system that blames them for the situation they find themselves in.
All right, let's take a call from Dave. Dave, you're a taxpayer.
Yeah, I disagree with it. I think if you can't live on the dole, there's something wrong with you. I live on $1,000 a month, and I don't get any. Well, that's what I live on. And the lady said she can't afford to pay rent, but if you're living on the dole, you get rent assistance. You can get rent assistance. So, and you can't go out drinking and partying in pubs. I can't go overseas. I can't do all these things, but that's what I choose to do. You know, I live on $1,000 a month.
How do you live on $1,000 a month, Dave? I mean, you obviously don't pay rent. You obviously don't pay rent.
I don't pay rent, but I've got an investment, and I live on that. I take some money off that.
Right. Okay. So a lot of your fixed costs are already paid, though, are they? I mean, you don't.
I pay electricity. I pay food. I don't pay rent. So I pay rego. I've got a car.
Yeah.
You know, I pay insurance on the car. Third-party insurance. I buy all my clothes from Vinnie's and everything like that, so you get some good clothes from Vinnie's. Food isn't that cheap. If you can't buy food on living on the dole, there's something wrong, you know? Well, we can't afford it as taxpayers. We've got to compete with Asia and all these other countries, and we're talking about, oh, I can't live on the dole. You get rent assistance, and I bought my house. I moved from Sydney, went over to the Pilbara, and worked for 3 years, and I'm lucky I got in really early in a country area.
Whereabouts are you now, Dave, roughly?
Hey?
Whereabouts roughly are you now?
I'm down the south coast of New South Wales.
Okay. All right, so...
And the only reason you don't get paid the dole when you move to a country area, if you move to a country area of high unemployment, if you move to an area of high... But if you move to a country area that's got not high unemployment, low unemployment, then you can get the dole straight away. If you move to a country area that's got high unemployment, where there's a good chance you will not get a job, you don't get the doctor.
Well, a lot of people might think that's fair enough. I mean, you know, you shouldn't be moving to an area where there is high unemployment, because that's not going to help your circumstances either.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Dave. I mean, that's another point. What do you think of those arguments, Connie?
Look, I think there's so many things that factor into whether you can survive. If you're not having to pay rent, that's one thing. If you're having to apply for 20 jobs a fortnight, you're having to pay transport in the city to get around, to actually go for job interviews, keep your mobile phone up to date. You know, there's a whole lot of costs associated with looking for work as well, which need to be considered in it. And it depends where you live. Rent is a big part of what makes people who are living on benefits, particularly Newstart, really struggle. As I mentioned earlier, a number of rental affordability studies have shown that people on Newstart with the rental assistance and the energy supplement need more than 100% of that total income in any of our capital cities, just about, certainly Canberra, Sydney, Melbourne, to get a one-bedroom accommodation in a share house.
Yeah, I mean, but Dave's right, isn't it? But people shouldn't be allowed to move to areas where there are no jobs.
Yeah,
they?
Absolutely. Yeah.
No. Peter, could we just go back to you for, I suppose, to answer to a basic question. Why hasn't the government done something about it? Is it just cost?
Well, I think that's, there's some sort of the political imperative to do things about it are not strong for people on Newstart. I mean, the other reason why not everybody on pensions is okay, right? But they're, in 2009, the Rudd government had a thoroughgoing review of the adequacy of pensions. And the gap between pensions and benefits grew, as I said, under the different indexation under the Howard government. But then the Rudd government in 2009 had a really large increase in pensions, because they said at the time that the pension rate, which was higher than Newstart even then, was inadequate for current living costs. So they had the sort of review that Connie referred to, you know, a thoroughgoing review of, you know, how you look at the adequacy of payments, but they only did it for pensions. So that widened the gap between pensions and benefits. But I think it's a reasonable increase. So say, there's about, 700. If you take account of youth allowance as well, there's about 800,000 people receiving youth allowance for being unemployed and Newstart. So you know, every $10 a week you increase it, it costs $8 million. So you know, if you're talking about $50 a week, it costs $40 million. I forgot to multiply by the number of weeks.
It's $40 million for every $5.
It's $40 million for every $10. If you're talking about you'd be talking, for a reasonable increase, you'd be talking about $500 million a year, probably. And that's I think it's sort of priorities that people don't think that. Presumably politicians don't think that it's a popular. Okay. Popular in the public.
All right.
I just want to mention one other thing, which is that people don't recognise there's an awful lot of there's an awful lot of movement in and out of the labour force in Australia. So even though every month when the ABS publishes the unemployment figures, there's about 800,000 people who are unemployed, but over the course of a year, the number of people who have a period of unemployment is more than 2 million. It's different people. Each year. People move from jobs to being out of work, or they move from not being in the labour force,
because of the casual nature of much employment. Alan wants to respond to Dave. Yes, Alan?
Yeah, I heard that guy said he worked at the Pilbara for 3 years.
Yep.
And all his comments, I was astounded. Of course, he can live on $250 a week if he gets right back. but that's because he doesn't have to find an average of 200 to 250 a week for rent.
Yeah.
That's what's crippling. I've got a house. I don't have to pay rent, but I have to pay other bills. If something goes wrong with the hot water, how am I going to... I barely cope each week. I take money out of my super to survive. But a lot of other people aren't in that circumstances. They have to find the money for the rent. And rent subsidy is only 50% of up to $150 a week. Mm. You find a place for $150 a week. You know,
yep.
That's all subsidy. I mean, it brings me to tears when I see other people really struggling to survive. And when John Howard can shoot his mouth off and say, I think the new start should go up $50 to $70 a week, and John Howard said that, then I think we really have to take notice.
Mm. Yep, okay, thank you. Troy, how much do you think it ought to be?
It's so hard to say, as it does depend on so many variables in regards to how much it should be increased. But there should also be looks on how effective the current incentives are, if there are other incentives that are implemented in other countries, if those are effective. Mm. If we're having people on New Start for an extended period of time, what needs to change in order to progress them into the workforce?
Yeah, I get that as well. Connie, this budget came and went, and the government obviously sees little political benefit in doing this. The longer it goes on, the worse it will get, presumably. But do you see the political imperative changing much?
I think it has to change, and what it will need to change is that people say, we care about this. We don't believe that as a community we want to see people who are struggling just to make ends meet, and to see people who are being forced into homelessness or dependence on food assistance. We know that a recent study showed that 64% of Australians would be happier paying more taxes if they got better social services, education, health, and various social support. So we just need the community voices to be speaking much more loudly into the political space to say this is something we care about. And we need more employers to be making, making the case that this is wasting the talents of so many Australians.
Mm. I suppose that gets down to the point too, just how much a productive capital, in that sense of human capital,
exactly,
we're squandering as well. We've run out of time, sadly, but I do appreciate your time. Connie Lenneberg is the Chief Executive of the Brotherhood of St Lawrence. Thanks for joining us, Connie.
Thank you, Phil.
Peter Whiteford from the Crawford School of Public Policy at the Australian National University in Canberra too, for providing a lot of the policy background to it. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you.
I appreciate your time. And Troy, who's 24 and had the courage to come and tell his story too, who's on New Start. Troy, thanks for coming on, and good luck, mate. I hope you get a job soon.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, good on you, Troy.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.